The show, a man who has become one of our cricket correspondents and has been giving us fantastic input on the sport of cricket, Kevin Rademeyer, who joins us now to talk about what has been so far a disastrous opening day. And in fact, it's just got worse as I see South Africa have just lost their eighth wicket. Kevin, good evening. Great to have you back on the show.
Good evening, Michael. It's been a while. I think the last time we spoke was on the eve of the Cricket World Cup final.
Well, has it really been that long, Kevin? My life has been a whirlwind for the past 2 months. I've hardly followed any cricket. I've been doing Olympics and traveling overseas and doing all sorts of crazy things. But it's good to have you back. And good to chat to you. Firstly, I was just ask you, it looks like you and I are going to have a difficult championship season with Luton losing, of course, what was a repeat of what was a Premier League fixture last season on the opening day to Burnley, and Norwich losing to newly promoted Oxford 2-0. So it hasn't started well for either of our sides.
It hasn't started well, but before I get into that, I just want to congratulate you on the work that you did for the Olympics. I don't think people understand what a difficult job it is, and I thought your professionalism was absolutely brilliant. So congratulations on that. You brought a whole different aspect to the mix. So well done to that.
You're very kind. You're very kind to say that. I must tell you, and it's I really do appreciate it. I literally came off a cruise ship where for the first 3 days of the Olympics, I hadn't seen a drop of the Olympic action. Flew in a 12-hour flight from Europe on the Monday evening, and Tuesday morning was in studio with literally zero preparation. So it was quite demanding in a very, very different role. So I'm glad in a way to be back in this seat where things are a little bit more comfortable. But thanks for your kind words, Kevin.
I hope you don't mind me saying this, but if I can remember correctly, the exact same thing happened before the Rugby World Cup final, which you had to commentate.
You've got a great memory. Indeed so. It seems if it's my destiny to sort of go into productions unprepared, which I hate to do, but anyhow, circumstances dictate. Let's talk about let me ask you firstly about your response to the football situation, then we'll talk cricket.
Look, I think we had tough starts. We, like you said, Luton was in the Premier League last year. We played against Burnley, which is a top side, lost 4-1 at home. We are struggling still. We haven't really signed anyone of note, even though we've got some parachute payments. We're waiting for a good midfielder. But our defence was made out of youngsters, a 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 21-year-old. And they just opened us up. I see you're also struggling with some of your best players leaving. But I think the teams will have enough depth by the end of August to pull it back. There's two more weeks of the window. And I think both teams are just lacking in a couple of positions. But the championship's always interesting. Anyone can beat anyone.
Exactly. And this weekend's going to be a fascinating one as well. And I mean, Norwich beating Stevenage, would you believe, 4-3 in the cup on Tuesday night. There was the little bit of hair that I had, I think I pulled out listening to the commentary of that one. Kevin, let's talk cricket. Really, a good toss to lose, I suppose, from a West Indies point of view, because Themba Bavuma electing to bat when he side won the toss. They were very, very quickly 20-3, and now I see 93-8, and just about hanging on. What is going on? That pitch, look, the ball's moving around all over the place, but is it a 93-8 pitch?
Look, we will only know once both teams are batted. The pitchers are tired at the moment. Same as in the first test there at the Queen's Park Oval. It wasn't an easy pitch. And Bavuma highlighted yesterday that the toughest part will be the first couple of overs and the first 30 overs when batting. The ball is moving around a lot. Seals is getting the ball to talk. And Joseph has had an unbelievable match at his home ground.
Yeah, absolutely so. Let's give his figures. 4-29 in 11 at the moment. Seals 3-32, bowling his 10th over. 93-8 at the moment. Just to go through that scorecard, D'Zorzi bowled through the gate for 1. Markram bowled by Joseph without playing a shot, one that nipped back for 14. Then Themba Bavuma out to LBW's second ball. They were 20-3. And you thought, well, it needs something remarkable, but a bit of a recovery, Beddingham and Stubbs. Beddingham, I thought, looked quite good. Stubbs should have been out maybe about 5 or 6 times before he was eventually dismissed. And now wickets have just fallen with regularity. So what is going on over there? And I mean, is it a very different pitch from the one that we saw in the first test?
Look, we struggled in the first test. There wasn't high scores. But the West Indies are starting to get a good bowling unit going together. Joseph is no mud. Seal is pretty handy. Holder can hold his own, and they've got a good little spinner. It's not the Malcolm Marshalls, the Walshes, and the Ambroses.
Yeah.
But these are high-performance athletes. And don't forget this, and I think, Michael, most of us once again forget this. The amount of tests that these players are playing, or even the preparation, is minimal. I mean, when last was there a four-day game in South Africa as preparation? Months ago. So the only person with a bit of training is probably Bellingham, who's been playing in England. But I don't think we must forget how tough it is for these players, even though, once again, they are professionals and high-performance athletes.
I think
without the training, it's tough.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point there. Just based on what I've seen so far, just watching a few of the highlights and the ball nipping around all over the place, do you think it was perhaps a surprising decision that South Africa went in with two spinners, with Keshav Maharaj and recalling Dane Peat to the starting lineup? He didn't play in the first test, of course. Is that a surprise given what we've seen so far?
I don't think so. I don't think they expected the ball to move this much. And they got a lot of criticism for the first test where they couldn't get the last five wickets. Of course, they only had Maharaj. If you'll remember, Maharaj got four wickets in the first innings, four wickets in the second, and he bowled a hell of a lot. I don't think he could bowl that much again in this match, and he needed some backup. I think the only question is, and people have been debating it now for the last couple of weeks, is Peat up for this level? His average is 40 a wicket. He hasn't shown brilliance at this level. So is he the man to come in and get those wickets? Is he the right man to support Maharaj? And time will tell.
Let's talk about some of the changes from this test, from the first test to this test. Maybe you can just go through for our listeners who's in, who's out compared to that first test.
Look, there was two changes, as you said, that Peat is obviously in. Then Peat is in for Rickleton, which means we lose a batsman in the middle order, which hasn't helped us today. When we needed a bowler in the last test, we put in the batsman, and
yes,
that's the other way around. And that's just fate. And then obviously Nandre Burger is in for Ngidi. Those are the two changes.
And what do you anticipate the impact of those changes will be? You've spoken about Dane Peat, but Nandre Burger, what can we expect there?
Well, we can always expect pace. We can expect hostility from him. But once again, does he have the overs in his legs? He's been playing a lot of white ball cricket lately. So will he be able to do an extended spell? And I think it becomes difficult in your third spell, in your fourth spell, if needed. And once again, we'll have to see whether the West Indies can push him into those spells.
If we look at the West Indies side, it looks like, I don't want to say a settled side, because West Indies cricket is anything but settled at the moment, but Alec Athanase batted brilliantly in that second innings to deny the Proteas a win. He's going to be obviously a key man, but with a ball moving around as it is, doing an Andre Berger, as you say, in the South African side with Kagiso Rabada as well, so, and Vion Mulder to back it up, do you anticipate the West Indies having batting problems effectively, and do you anticipate as a result a low-scoring test match?
I do. If we see how much the ball is moving now, if we get to 120, I guess at this point it's a good score, that 93 for 8, and that will depend on their top order. If they're able to see off Rabada, I mean, Rabada needs 5 wickets to be the quickest quick bowler in South Africa to get to 300 wickets,
yeah,
and if they can get off Berger, they will set up this match. So it'll be up to those guys, up to Berg and to Rabada to make the quick breakthroughs. On this pitch, like I said, we don't know. We're sitting here thousands of miles away. It's always different at the field itself.
Let me get your impressions then of the first test. Let's look back on that. There were some very pleasing performances. One or two maybe not so good, but I suppose that can be put down to, as you say, the lack of preparation going into this particular series. But what pleased you particularly? Just pick out maybe certain aspects of that first test match that you thought South Africa are really knuckling down. They've got maybe a player who stood up, or somebody who's just contributed nicely to the cause, who might have given themselves a bit of credit going forward as far as test series cricket is concerned.
Look, I think the most pleasing aspect was probably Stubbs' performance. We are struggling to get a number 3. He did well today again, but in that first test, he really acquitted himself well of it. He stayed there for a long period. And I do believe the coach trusts in him and believes that he is the future at number three. He did really well. And obviously, Maharaj, who needed to toil with the ball, is always someone that we can rely on. It is difficult to say. Once again, it was a difficult test match. Almost half of the sessions were rained out. I see that rain is, quite a lot of rain is predicted for this test match as well. So it was a stop-start test match. We were hoping to get, obviously, those last 10 wickets on the final day. But Maharaj just didn't have enough support on the other side, I guess, to do it. But Stubbs, I think, is a person that was shining the light and someone that we do need to make sure that we be successful in test cricket going forward.
What do you make of the left-hand, right-hand combination right at the top of the order, Markram and De Zorzi? Do you think that's got legs effectively to take South Africa forward in the longer version of the game, at least for the foreseeable future?
I guess we are all frustrated, and I think let's start with Markram. I think we're all frustrated at how he performs away from home. I think his average at home is just around about 40. Away from home, I believe it's 21 now. And for a man that is as talented as he is, that has got all the attributes, I think everyone is still frustrated knowing how good he is. He needs to come to the party, and De Zorzi is still new in test cricket and still needs to find his feet. The left hand, right hand is always good, but at the end of the day, we need some consistency. Just not getting that consistency at the moment.
Kevin, talk to our listeners about what's coming up as far as test cricket is concerned for the rest of the year. I know action reverts to South Africa. There are two tours that we'll effectively be hosting over the course of our summer. Just give us some details in terms of that.
That's correct. Once again, when we finish this match, there is no more test matches for a couple of months. Then in November, Sri Lanka come to our shores for a two test series. After they finished, it'll be an excellent series of Pakistan. They're coming for a couple of three test matches, or a couple of test matches, as well as some white ball cricket, T20s and some ODIs. That'll be the major tour, the big summer tour to South Africa will be Pakistan. So at least there's four more test matches left this year where we can try and do something with it for our summer. And then once again, back to one-day cricket and T20 cricket.
You mentioned that, and it's a nice lead-in to my next question. The squad, of course, for the rest of the West Indies tour, which reverts to T20 internationals, was named. Two debutants in that side, Kwena Mapaka, and that man I know you watched extensively playing for the Lions last season domestically and having a pretty good season and getting the call-up as a result, and Jason Smith, also included in that squad. What do you make of the squad, and how much credit is it to these two young players for the work they've put in domestically?
If you'll remember, Michael, the Proteas went to go and play three T20s just before the World Cup in West Indies, and we lost that 3-0. We were missing most of our top players because of IPL fixtures, and we find ourselves almost in that same situation again. We have about nine players missing out. Quinton de Kock, Klaassen, Miller, Nokia, Shan. Maharaj and Janssen are actually also going to rest. So there are some new faces in. I think we also, once again, lack some depth. It's not easy when a team loses the firepower of a Klaassen, a Miller, and a Nokia. But it does give people a chance. It gives the team a chance to try and get some depth for the next T20 World Cup, which is 2 years away. And I think it's exciting for the nation to see guys like Mapaka and Smith in. Smith obviously was the highest run scorer in the CSA T20 Challenge. He deserves his chance in the middle order. If he can be helped by guys like Ferreira, who's doing really well in the 100 series in the UK at the moment, we can maybe try and get some firepower in that middle order. I see we've just lost our ninth wicket as we talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's Vereno, the man who's out. So it's effectively 10 and 11 looking to hold things up. And five wickets now for Shamar Joseph, who's bowled unbelievably.
That's brilliant. And it's always great to see new faces coming through in test cricket. And I think the West Indies need it. So that's a bright side at least.
West Indies are a formidable side in the T20 version of the game. We know just how talented they are. They've got a lot of dangerous players, not all of whom will be available, of course, but how do you see the T20 series going?
Once again, like I said, we struggled before the World Cup. I see us struggling again with all of those players out. But like I said, I think we should rather see the positives of it. It's another chance for our youngsters to get a game. We can build some depth. We've seen in Springbok rugby that it's not always in the interest of the nation to play the strongest team, but to give the youngsters a chance to play with some senior players, because we will need more depth going forward in the next 2 or 3 years. So as long as we use it, we get our processes correct, and we give everyone a chance to be exposed to that level, to see whether they are up for it or not.
Kevin, 97 for 9. Can South Africa get at least to three figures with 10 and 11 at the wicket?
Let's be positive. I think we will. Even if it's a nick through the slips, let's be positive.
With all the attacking fields that are set, it's quite possible that could happen. Kevin Rademeyer, as always, great to chat to you. Thank you so much for all your insights and all your extensive knowledge about the sport of cricket. And I promise we won't wait so long next time before we prevail on your services again. Thanks for all the input. And let's hope that the second half of the day, or the second little bit of the day and going into tomorrow, is a little bit better for the Proteas, who are currently 97 for 9. Great to chat to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Much, Michael. Have a lovely evening.